Hi, everyone. One of the issues a lot of people face early on is the desire to find an unschooling community. A few states have a lot of unschoolers, many of these creating their own park days or get-togethers. This is an ever-evolving scenario, though. Kids get bigger, their interests change, the families move in a different direction and stop coordinating particular activities. And then someone else steps up because there's a need. Usually their own child has an interest and would like it more with other kids around. So that's what I want to talk to you about this week, finding or creating the communities you need. We moved a lot, and sometimes we tapped into what was there, finding families we could connect with. And other times we didn't find what we needed, so we created a new community. Don't worry, it's not as daunting as it sounds. I'm Sue Patterson, your host here at the Unschooling Mom to Mom podcast. I bring 25 years of experience within the unschooling community. My three unschooled kids are now grown. They're 32, 30, and 27, all with different interests and temperaments. And I mentioned that we moved a lot, so we met a lot of families along the way, and I saw what made unschooling work and what didn't. So that's what I want to share with you. Now that I'm on the other side, so to speak, I can tell you confidently that unschooling works. And also, I can tell you that you'll probably have to learn and unlearn a lot yourself about education, parenting, and even human development, but it's worth it. Before I talk about community finding and building, I want to remind you that it's not one size fits all. And when we talk about community, some people might be talking about creating a support community where like-minded people or even people who share a particular interest get together, while others might be talking about the community where you live, urban or rural or suburban, and tapping into what's available there. But since these podcasts are short, let's talk communities from a support standpoint. After this past year, people are much more accepting of the concept of online support communities, because that's primarily all that was available. These will probably continue because they're so easy to connect with. I have several on social media available for you, Unschooling Mom to Mom on Facebook or Instagram, and then taking it up a notch with my Creating Confidence membership community, where we talk through Zoom multiple times a week and have a WhatsApp chat for in between. So you might do that and look for local community too. I'll put a link below to help you find local groups, and you can see if you can find people that are venturing out and connecting. I'd like to mention too that fall, August through September for us in the States, but probably whatever months are near the times when kids head back to public school in your country or community, this is the most active time for support groups. It's the time to go and introduce yourself. It's also when families decide to get together to do various activities, and your kid might like to be included. So don't miss this time of year. It kind of falls off in the spring and summer months as families get busy with their own things or homeschooling moms start to burn out a little. Support groups typically offer a variety of things. A not back to school party, ours usually seem to be at a big swimming pool on the first day of public school, but they can be anywhere. Park days, field trips, group activities, usually whatever the kids are interested in. But what do you do when you don't find unschooling groups or any groups that work for you? Or maybe the groups that exist are more homeschooly than unschooly. Lots of times we participated in groups that were more eclectic, a mix of homeschooling methods represented. The kids usually didn't care. They just wanted the group activity or hanging out with other kids. I found it always helpful to search for the common ground with the other moms and then wander off to push kids on swings when the conversation shifted to curriculum. You don't have to have an unschooling only group, though. Not that you want to be around too many vocally that are anti-unschooling. That can certainly wear you down, but you'll have to figure out what will work best for you. There are conferences you can travel to get that experience of being around a lot of unschooling families. We did that a lot. Once the pandemic ends, I think they'll resume. They've continued as online Zoom style conferences, but they're really pretty fun. it's possible that the existing groups aren't going to meet the needs of everyone in your family. And that's really what I want to be sure to talk about. It may be that you have to create group activities, but it doesn't have to be a giant undertaking. You can post onto a local Facebook group or email list that you'd like to do a regular park day or hike in the area. Maybe it'd be a monthly hiking group and the kids could help choose where to go each month. There are two really positive aspects of coordinating the groups yourself. Number one, you get to control the calendar. You can make it work when it works for you. Of course, you may want to check with the others too to be sure that other families want to come, but you get the final say. And number two, you choose activities that your kids enjoy. That way, if not a lot of people show up, it's still fun. Activities can be simple, like potlucks and water play, or messy crafts that are more fun to do with other kids sometimes. And other moms are often eager to let somebody that loves that host it instead of them. And maybe it's a monthly get together at a local nature center with the naturalist there to guide a little. When we lived in Alaska, we worked out a deal with our favorite nature center, and the naturalist offered her regular Saturday kids' nature classes for us on Fridays. In exchange, we bought family memberships and paid a couple of dollars per kid. It was great. It doesn't take a lot to call up anywhere, really, and see if they'll offer something for a small group of kids. And then you negotiate the fee. We had photographers do teen classes around town. You'll bring your camera and shoot different things with someone who actually knew what they were doing. We had community service projects that happened monthly. We tried out different projects and then continued with a handful. We became Girl Scout leaders to make sure the troops had fun activities instead of a schooly approach. We coordinated magic shows where magicians came to perform for a small group. The same for puppet shows and improv actors and even an unemployed zoologist who brought a bunch of animals. That might have been a birthday party. I don't know. Sometimes they were one and done activities, which might be a good fit for you. Other times they were ongoing. My tip for this is to host things on Fridays. No one likes Monday get-togethers, it seems. And local homeschoolers may participate in your activity and use it as incentive for their kids and their week of schoolwork. You know, if you want to go to the Patterson's thing on Friday, you'll have to finish this work. I'm not a fan of that, obviously, but it is what it is. And we wanted more families to participate. There really are as many options of activities as your community offers, as your imagination offers, as your kids are interested in. You can always have movie nights or tie-dyeing or sing-alongs. You know, after polling the Unschooling Mom-to-Mom community on Instagram, I was surprised to learn that a large number of unschooling parents lean toward being introverts. So I realized this is hard. And if you're nodding along, you're not alone. But if your kid needs you to push through a little of that, it's doable. I've seen a lot of introverted mamas pull it off. One tip is to print out announcements or invites when you go to activities so you don't have to talk to everyone in the group. You just hand out your colorful piece of paper at the next event. And now online, that's even easier. One other option, if you're writing these down, is to check with the local extension office. We were able to create 4-H groups that didn't have anything to do with animals. They usually have a lot of kids participating, and they're grateful to have adults agree to lead the groups. We led 4-H groups that did community service, as well as small theater productions and acting. My kids also participated in quiz bowls, you know, trivia-themed competitions, and dog training, and various leadership camps. I mention all these because sometimes parents don't know that 4-H is an option for way more than showing animals. So I hope this helps a little bit as you're trying to figure out how to find or create a community that can work for your kids. We brainstorm about these kinds of things in my coaching group if you'd like more ideas and input. I'll add resource links in the show notes so that it's easy to find. Reach out if you need help. You really don't have to do this alone. So thanks for listening. And I'll talk with you again next week.